Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Welcome to it. It's Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore is with us. Danny Burke, the pride of Chicago, producing and engineering. We are loaded up today. 40 minutes of football kicks off. Now that Blackshirt Jay Bird is in studio, excited to get his thoughts. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Mike Schuhart. Mr. Shuey in about 30 minutes, and then in hour two, go around the college football world. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider College Game Day, will join us. And then to start off next hour, how about Bill Bush? That's a name Nebraska fans hear. Some love, some are stepping back towards, but a great chance to catch up with a guy who's worked for some of the best in college football. Now he returns to his home state as co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers, in our chat with Coach Bill Bush of Rutgers in 1 hour. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776, toll free 800-825-5865, and you can get us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, or at JMoore44. Bird, you looked marvelous on TV last night with Big Red Wrap-Up. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for that.
Do they keep the studio cool for you?
Very cool.
100 years ago, I interned there.
No, it was
nice.
They
said, don't come back.
It was nice. I thought, I'd be sweating like someone in church. And under those lights, but I wasn't. I stayed pretty cool. So it was good. It was fun. And I was always told I had a face for radio, but, apparently
I
not.
I still get that.
No,
that's fine. No, good man. Good work. And the folks at NET are awesome. Awesome people. They do a great job. And you had a chance to kind of go over what happened against Northern Illinois and look ahead to Rutgers and with some of the film you saw and what you see. Here's my main question. We'll get into, who's got to carry the water shortly. We'll hear from Slick Rick. You ask, who is Slick Rick? Sometimes he's known as Slick Rick. Sometimes he's known as Skippy. Rick Neuheisel now does work for ESPNU Radio. He had thoughts on Nebraska and Sean Eichhorst. We'll have that juicy little nugget for you here in about 15 minutes. What's he say about the Nebraska situation? It's been pretty much a national focus today and going into a bit of yesterday between ESPN. Mitch Sherman was with us. Adam Rittenberg. They're trying to figure out what's up with Nebraska. Andy Staples jumping on board, taking questions on Nebraska when it comes to hot seat discussion and where the team's at. I want to ask you, because we'll talk to Bill Bush about this too, because he's a native Nebraskan that got his dream shot to come back and coach at Nebraska, was let go in the end of the 07 season, part of that Callahan staff. You played for Frank, you played for Bill, you played for Bo. And I wanted to ask you, as a player in that 04 season, what was it like to just make it through the week of practice? Because really, you had some fan unrest at the end of 03, mm-hmm. and then changes were made. And Nebraska's notorious for wanting excellent football, and that's a fair demand. That's what the fans want. That's what they've had. That's what they want to get back to. That being said, you still have players and coaches that got to go do their thing. And believe it or not, they're trying to win, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Is it hard to focus and get through a week like this week as a player when you've got the noise levels at 12 out of 10?
It's never easy when you lose, whether it's year one, year two, or year three. It's never easy here just because it gets a lot of people's attention, obviously, and the pressure rises, and the call-out game starts coming from everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you want to go back to 04, that's year one. I think that's
sure.
You go back to the biggest thing from 04, obviously.
The general feel and how you deal with it.
Yeah, you just
and I picked 04 because
right.
it was
right. Well, you go five.
It was
and six.
Easy. I'm
right,
sorry.
It's 5-6, and you don't make a bowl game for the first time in a long time. But if you want to ever get the epitome of a square peg round hole,
sure.
I mean, Joe Daly is an option quarterback trying to be a West Coast quarterback. I mean, that's as perfect as you can get. But looking what this team is dealing with now. It's when it's me or whoever, former players or media, call them out, which I think needs to be done. Mm-hmm. You have to ignore it as much as possible. You have to block out the noise because the noise is so much greater than what I ever had to deal with, whether it's social media, whether it's the media attention, whether it's all sorts of different things that the people have a voice and they have immediate accessibility to ABC player.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to ignore it. You have to pay attention to the ones that really matter, and that's your coaches, and that's your teammates. And one thing I said on the show on Big Red Wrap-Up last night was, I know after the post game, I think it was, whether it was Luke McNitt or whoever it may be, is like, there's no finger pointing in the locker room. We all still know that our goals are still out there, whatever those may be.
And that was kind of reiterated by a few players, right?
Right. But I said if there's ever a time for finger pointing, it's now. I think.
So you're opposite of that.
Yeah. You know what? I think people need to get called out in some of these situations because it comes from your peers and has a greater effect. I mean, this is a time. It's no more nice. Hey, if you're biting your tongue, you're biting your lip a little bit that you want to say something, hey, it's. I don't want to go there. It's now or never right now for this football team. You come out and you play well and you look like a good football team against Rutgers. You could get some momentum going, some confidence going, but you don't. I mean, this rest of the season is not gonna be good. So this is a time to start pointing fingers like, hey, whoever it may be, you've played way too many snaps to be making those same mistakes. Get your crap together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you, it's a time. Like, I think now is a time where guys need to get called out by the staff, by former players, whatever it may be, because there's a lot of tails on the line here, whether it's coaches, whether it's players' current playing status. If they don't improve, you got to make changes, whether it's at positions or whatever. I mean, this is a make or break part of the season right now, and it's only the fourth game of the year. But that's just that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
And I thought here's the math I did leading into this year, and I'm not backpedaling, I'm not shying away. I'm a guy who said 9 to 10 wins. Okay. And you can look at that now, 1-2, could be 0-3, mm-hmm. could be 3-0. I mean, there's just, but you feel closer to 0-3.
100%.
Right?
100% 0-3 for sure.
So I did not anticipate the problems with the offense. And, it is an offensive shift. It didn't hit me that, it's a scheme change offensively. Well, it is because you don't have the running quarterback. You don't have the zone read element. And you have Tanner Lee, who's not a mobile quarterback. He's not a dual threat quarterback. And I just glanced over that being a problem. Or it's different, but I didn't consider it as to be something that would be detrimental because, listen, you've got square peg, square hole now, right?
Right.
But instead, you're asking guys to be great on the offensive line that may or may not be great on the offensive line. And with last year, you had a running quarterback and you had different options at tailback as a little bit more diverse, right? And if you don't have a mobile quarterback and you don't have a great offensive line, you're a dead man back there behind center. And we've seen that through three games.
Right, it has. What's funny is I think people want to.
I just thought it'd be okay because this is what they know and this is what they've been good at.
Right. You think about, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 offensive linemen that have played a lot of snaps. You think you can only get better. How could they regress? Which they have regressed, in my opinion. I think Gates has regressed, in my opinion. I think Farmer has. I mean, there's too many mistakes being made by guys who play. And I said this on Monday.
Is that communication or is it just technique?
I think it's everything. I think communication is very important. You got to make sure. I mean, that's you can't execute the right technique if You don't know what you're supposed to do. You might have to slide to your right and you in with the communication, but you don't get it and you go to your left and the guy runs free and smokes Tanner Lee. Mm-hmm. But I think it's funny how, you know, we are all pretty tough on Tommy Armstrong, decision making, blah, blah, blah.
Same passes are being thrown.
Right. And same offensive line issues. I think now you kind of take for granted what Tommy is able to do with that escapability, being able to make guys miss, and even like Terrell Newby, being able to make guys miss the backfield, because Mikael Wilbon did a hell of a job on Saturday
phenomenal.
When he was getting hit damn near as he's getting the handoff, and he's able to still get 4, 5, 6
18
yards.
To 26 touches he's hit behind right. the line or at the line.
So it's just tough, and it's unfortunate that you're in year three and you still have the same issues offensively with offensive line. That's you can't have that.
So let me go down this road here, and we'll get to Slick Rick's comments here on the state of Nebraska football. Rick Neuheisel on ESPN Radio. I need to ask this, and maybe it'll happen by Saturday. The guys are just getting rolling now with a practice that's closed to everybody. But speaking of jobs and playing better, do you think the hesitancy to pull starters is okay? We don't want to invoke more panic. Guys feel bad enough as it is. Give them another chance to come out, play better, and do what they know they can do. Or are guys not developed behind them? Have they been getting practice reps? Have they been working and getting better? Because we don't know what's been going on Monday through Thursday to get ready for games. And in the last nine, that's been an issue. You're 3-6. Mm-hmm. And some of those teams you play are just better than you. But you've had a tendency these last 3 years to lose to teams that you're, air quote, not supposed to lose to. So are you going to make changes on the offensive line? Are you going to make and take a serious look at center? And are you doing that look at center in the name of maybe moving Conrad back to tackle? Because, listen, it's Neville's got a jacked foot. You got an oven mitt on homeboy from South Dakota.
Farniok.
And you burn a red shirt, or do you play a guy you've not felt comfortable playing in Gaylord? Gaylord played a veer option offense in high school. He can run block for you. Mm-hmm. Farmer can run block for you.
Or do you play Hymus as a true freshman?
Right. So, again, we'll see if changes are made for change's sake or if they're forced due to injury and that lineup shakeup Riley talked about Monday due to injury. But say guys aren't hurt. If guys aren't getting it done, is there a fear down there of somebody like a Gates or a Foster, or I'm just coming up with two guys that have played the most snaps, losing their job if they're not getting it done? Everyone took turns having a bad day on Saturday. But the guys you expect to have the least amount of mistakes are those guys on the left side.
Yeah, it's just me. I,
how would you react? You come in.
Here's my biggest thing.
On
right.
Tuesday, you come in on Tuesday. Jay Moore, X, Y, and Z didn't get it done. You're bent.
As a coach, I don't ever want to overreact to something because I think that shows panic. You don't want to show that. But listen, this is. Like the currently the Titanic just hit an iceberg.
Okay.
This SOB is going down. All right. What are you going to do?
Whenever we go whenever we go oceanic disasters, we always pick the Titanic.
Right. Right. Well, it's just like the greatest in history, you know. But this
sucker. We don't go Gilligan. No,
right.
We
this SOB is going down. So what are you going to do to try to fix this? Are you going to say everything's status quo and let's just go hop on some life rafts and hopefully we can get out of there and not freeze to death and see Leonardo DiCaprio fall to the bottom of the ocean?
Never saw the movie.
Right. Or are you going to try to do something? You know, you're going to say, hey, if I'm going down, I'm going down guns blazing. And you're not picking up. You're not doing your job. You're not doing your job. You're not doing your job. And you've had a couple years to do this, and I'm tired of seeing you make the same mistake. So how about you come take a seat by me, and we're going to see what homeboy over here can do. And if he can't do it, great. Hey, now we got a battle competition. But, hey, if he can do it, you're going to keep sitting by me because I got a guy that can do it, and I got a guy that can do it consistently. It's pretty simple as that. I mean, hey, if you're –
But is that their policy?
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But if there's ever a game to try.
There's the other side, though, too, of these guys give us our best chance to win.
Right.
And from an offensive line standpoint, I think Conrad's a good football player. I just think there's been issues at center for Nebraska for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't had a butt kicking center since
Utter's, Raiola. Raiola is one of the best that you've had.
But that's 20 years ago.
And John Garrison was a damn good one.
He was big time. But you have to go to like Justin Jackson, who came over from the defensive line. Mm-hmm. The pride of Norris, right? Time they just mauled people at that center spot, and people are asking a lot about Decker. What we'll see. Maybe he makes progress this week and earns some trust.
I know the biggest thing with the O-line, too, is unity, cohesion amongst
all
five.
You got to be gelled, don't you?
I get that. But anymore, give me some guy that's just going to flat get after it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to make a mistake, make it fast. Mm-hmm. And don't make it half-assed to where you're getting blown back in the backfield and, you're getting ran into. You're almost becoming another defender, because that happened way too much by Conrad, by whoever it may be. If you're going to do it fast to where it's decisive, it's quick, there's some purpose there. No hesitation. Don't play. It just seems this whole team, throughout all three phases, it just seems like they are playing not to lose.
Well, they're so tight. They are so tight.
It's puckered.
Yeah. The pecker factor's 12. And it went from 8 to 12, which probably isn't real comfortable after that pick six. Moon River. All right. There's Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt. Hail Varsity continues. Coming up, Bill Bush. Hail Varsity continues on.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore, former Husker assistant, and now co-D coordinator at Rutgers, Bill Bush. Coming up, Brad Edwards of ESPN College Football, ESPN Insider. Jay Moore is in studio. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke. Okay, Rick Neuheisel is doing some work for ESPN Radio. Many of you may remember Neuheisel, very successful, quick stints in some programs, took over Colorado after Bill McCartney. They were good. He bolted, went to Washington. They were good. He bolted. Was
UCLA.
UCLA recently. Mm-hmm. Was there for a bit. And Rick's, it's kind of football karma here, because he took over some loaded programs and got out before it got bad. And then he walked in to UCLA and really couldn't get it done there. But, man, did he recruit and leave a lot of – and I think Moore is a good recruiter, too. But he left a lot of talent those first couple of years for Jim Mora. And now Neuheisel's been doing some serious work with ESPNU. And Nebraska came up today on ESPNU. And there's three different parts. You can chime in on this, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Here's what Slick Rick had to say about the Nebraska situation and kind of his take on things. And this goes into Riley, into I-Corst, and into kind of where the state's at. We'll also get into a little bit here who's carrying the water on Saturday, and ideally all three phases do that, but from a confidence standpoint, where are you? But here's the first part of Rick Neuheisel and what's going on here with Nebraska.
Change is hard. When you're doing things that are not what the culture of Nebraska football have been over the years, it's going to be difficult. You're going through a transitional period, and we said this before the season started, that this was going to be hard. And it's proven to be, as they sit there right now, 1-2, having lost just to Northern Illinois. But this is where Sean Eichhorst has got to be the strongest guy in the world.
Okay. So he's talking leadership and he's talking administration. Neuheisel has a lot of experience with the good and the bad of that. Okay. And administration's always been just a different animal at Colorado. Administration was extremely supportive of him until they fired him, and then he sued them for $5 million because of an NCAA tournament pool and won that in UCLA. So he's had interesting jobs. More from Neuheisel here when it comes to leadership and standing up.
This is where he's got to stand up and say, listen, I understand the frustration. He can't stand up and say, you know, I'm angry. I'm frustrated. What you have to do is 100% defend your guy. Because here's the deal. When you made that deal with Mike Riley, it was the all or nothing deal. It's you two on the line. And that's how you make the boat float. If you've got some people on the boat trying to figure out, I need to get off this thing, it's going down, then it for sure will go down. Everybody on that's got to be all hands on deck. We've got to figure out a way to make this thing sail.
That's Slick Rick Neuheisel, and defending your guy. That's what was so weird about Saturday to me. Not that you made an appearance that was unique, yes, but what was said and how it was said. And there's two ways you can go about it. Are you going to try and calm fans by saying what he said, that it's not good enough, it's not acceptable? That's true. But do your coaches and players need to hear that from administration? To me, are you going to have your dudes back, or are you going to move out of the way? It looks that way to some. It looks that way to Rick Neuheisel.
Yeah, it's a tough – it's one of those where it's damned if you do, damned if you mm-hmm. don't. Six one way, half a dozen the other. You go out there and you make comments after the game, and it looks weird because Sean, one of those guys, is, hey, I don't make comments during the season. I'm kind of out of the way. I'm, you know, not to be seen, not to be heard. Then he starts, you know. So it's kind of contradicting himself a little bit. But when it comes to players, I mean, you don't care one bit about what's going on at the third floor of Memorial Stadium. I mean, you don't. Doesn't matter. Doesn't really pertain to you. I mean, you like I said before, you focus on what your coaches mm-hmm. and what your teammates are doing. But it's a tough situation because as an AD, when you get rid of a guy that's won 9 games, and there were some bad losses, and then you hire a guy that hasn't won a whole lot of seasons with 9 wins in them and barely over .500 as his record, you're taking a lot of heat. And I know just in talking with people that Sean's done everything he can to help out Mike and his staff. I mean, it's the investment's been
incredible.
The checkbook has been there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the funds, everything that was needed done. When you get your guy in here and you need him to work out, that's what you're going to do.
Sure.
I mean, that's what you have to do. But when it doesn't work out, now it goes right back to Sean. And he's in a tough spot, whether you like the guy or not. And I know a lot of people, some people do like him, some people don't. But he's in a tough spot because this is his guy, and he's tied to this. Mm-hmm. He's tied to Coach Riley.
The comments were maybe meant to soothe and just, I hear you, it ain't good enough, but it didn't look supportive.
Post game. He was saying, yes, I'm frustrated, I'm mad, it needs to be better.
The message, though, is, hey, we will get it done,
right?
Not they better get it.
Right.
That's what Neuheisel was saying. More here on Boat Floating from Skippy.
The old adage of a guy going on the taking a bunch of guys to go capture something on an island, he says, burn the boats. We're not coming off here. It's the all or nothing. We either win or we perish trying. And that's where Sean Eichhorst finds himself right now. So no more of this, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm like all the Nebraska fans. Just say, I get it. I hear you. We are going to get it done. Not they are going to get it done. We are going to get it done. And hopefully that's what we can hear from Sean Eichhorst from here on out. Not any of this stuff that I'm one of you as the fans. You're in the boat. Make it float.
You know, whatever floats your boat, that term, not a huge fan of it. But it kind of makes sense mm-hmm. here. Back to the Titanic discussion earlier in the show.
seamless transition.
Yeah,
there.
So how does this boat float on Saturday? Who's carrying the water versus helping bail the water with Nebraska football? Is it the defense that has continued to get better? Is it the offense that my take is the offense got to come out and just be absolutely teed off and take it out on somebody. Now, I don't think Rutgers is, you know, Ray Rice, full strength Rutgers of the Schiano era. But I think Rutgers has some ballers. They just don't have the depth yet. They, you know, they're in year two under Ash.
And they're playing better football.
They're playing. They got a little bit of confidence. I mean, they smoked somebody 65-0.
Morgan State like has a scored a touchdown in three games.
Sure,
but they
point is they took the lunch money.
Right, but they played Washington tough the first game of the year.
Yeah, it looked that way. They played Washington way better than anybody thought they would.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, so Rutgers comes in here like there's blood in the water. Who do you think, if Nebraska wins Saturday, who's, let's talk finger pointing, point the finger at the why. Who wins the football game? What side of the ball is the reason Nebraska gets it done on Saturday?
Well, I would love to say the offense. If the offensive line gets their crap together and gets after a little bit and establishes line of scrimmage.
Don't you have to see that?
And run the ball. I mean, don't throw it 40 flipping times.
Mm-hmm.
How about you have 30-some rushes for three Bills, you know, or 30-some rushes for – or 40-some rushes for three Bills, whatever it may be. Commit to something. Commit to it.
Well, they're talking identity this week,
right,
Jay.
And well, that's just the thing. But what? That's my biggest thing. Nebraska still doesn't have an identity in year three because, hey, we look really good when we played UCLA in the bowl game. This is what you want to do. You rushed well. You're able to do some play action. But then that plan goes milk carton. And then you have games where you want to throw it 40 times where you've threw it 40 against Northern Illinois, and we have not won a game here when you throw it 40 plus times. You've won every game and you rush for 200 plus yards. The analysis is there. I just don't know. I mean, I understand that, you know, I think offensive coordinators or just staff, you know, offensive staff, they say, okay, well, we're struggling to run the ball, so we can't do it. But my biggest thing and my biggest take is, okay, sometimes you're going to – you know, sometimes you run it three times in a row, you might only get 3 yards and you punt the ball. It's third and six and you punt it and you flip the field and you say, hey, defense, go get us a stop and go make something happen. You hope that. And know what? That's better than throwing a pick six. That's better than forcing something. That's better than creating or putting your defense in a tough spot because you just turn it over and you gave them a short field. It's hard. Sometimes you got to play that game. Sometimes you got to commit to it. We're running the ball. We're not extending the game. We're shortening the game. We're going to own the time possession. We're going to give our defense in better field position. And we're going to commit to running this football, whether it's a tailback, a fullback, two tight ends, whatever it may be. We're going to own the numbers game of this running, and then we're going to do it. And, hey, you're just going to stop us. It's just, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And it's just that's the type of game it's going to be in. Because obviously, when you throw it 40 times, it's not successful. That's just – you just got to commit to it. That's my biggest thing. This staff has to commit to something.
Well, it's a mentality, Jay. And their mentality has always been, let's run the football for the sheer fact that helps our play action. It's not let's run the football to go – body blow somebody for 2.5 quarters. I mean, some years could be different than others, and I'm talking the glory years at Oregon State when they had some stud backs. But right now, are they not running it because they don't want to run it more, or are they not running because they don't believe they can run it?
I think it's a mix of both. I just think that they don't see efficiency.
When in doubt, let's air it out. I mean...
They don't see the efficiency of running the football right now. I mean, when you have guys running free and you struggle block picking up run blitzes, and I mean, when you don't do anything right,
which was Saturday a lot of the time.
I mean, it's just hard to do anything. I mean, hell, if they weren't able to run the ball, but they completed a lot of passes and they won the game, and hey, good job, good counter punch to their initial action. But it didn't happen. I mean, you have three picks, two go for touchdowns. It's just, I mean, to me, the call of that bubble screen, hey, I know that guy made a hell of a play, the DB, but I just don't like running a bubble screen. Right there, because the threat of going deep, they're right there. They have no threat. They're going to play tight. I just don't get it.
Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey is in. We'll get his thoughts. We'll tell you about the latest bourbon tasting at Wilderness Ridge as well. Bill Bush coming up. Brad Edwards on the way. Your thoughts and calls as well with Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We're back. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. We're talking some golf. We're talking some football. And WildernessRidgeGolf.com is where you log on. 434-5106. Summer-like weather, but it'll soon get a little chilly, but not too chilly, to go play some golf. And if you're a bourbon fan, and there might be more bourbon fans growing by the weekend, what you can do is check out Wilderness Ridge. The response to the first bourbon tasting, which is October 25th, was just so overwhelming. There's going to be another date for you if you love bourbon, if you're into bourbon, or if you want to learn and acquire that bourbon taste. It's going to be Wednesday, November 1st at 6:30 for round two of the bourbon tasting at Wilderness Ridge. And I tell you what, those pours and the brands you know and love and that are legendary are going to be paired with just incredible cuisine from Chef Eric Straley. So please mark your calendar November 1st, 6:30. It's $30. You can log on WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Get your ticket to get to the second flight of bourbon tasting at Wilderness Ridge on November 1st. You can log on Wilderness Ridge Golf now to get membership benefit information and membership pricing. Mr. Mike Shuhart, Shuey is in. Shuey, how are you, sir?
Good. Good. Great. Golfing weather.
It
Sun's
is.
Sun's out. 90 degrees.
Sun's out,
are
guns out, Shuey. I like that polo.
I don't know about that. No guns. But.
Yeah. So tell me about your weekend.
It was okay. Yeah? We just got back from Wisconsin, yep. So we played the East-West match play tournament out there in Wisconsin and played okay. I mean, we did all right. It was very interesting. So you play 36 holes. The 36 holes seed you. You have the top four seeds, and then you have the bottom four seeds. Then they go into a match play. Mm-hmm. So between the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth team, there was like three shots.
Oh, wow.
That separated all three of those. Iowa State and Oregon kind of, they played pretty good. They were a little bit ahead of everybody else. But we were right there for a second. So we ended up finishing, I think, in the tied for fifth and sixth, actually.
Okay.
So then you go into the match play, and we played Cal Davis. In the first round of matches. So we win two matches. They win two matches. So we got our third match out there going and went 27 holes. So they went nine extra holes before the girl from Davis beat our girl. So on the 27th extra hole. So it was exciting. And then you play the next day, you play another match. We played Michigan in the last match, which is another great match. Michigan has the defending Big Ten champ. So. Our best player was playing hers and came right down the last hole, and she made a great birdie on the last hole to beat her one up, and we won the match 3-2. So that's a lot of exciting golf.
That's impressive, and what you want, and we talked about confidence and being in contention, and you got to be proud of your team, the gals, to come through with Husker Golf like they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's part of the whole process again. I mean, you got to get there, and you got to learn how to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I love that saying.
And that's so true because, you know, I'm really proud of Audrey who played the girl from Michigan because that girl's a top probably 15, 20 player in the country, you know, and she's got to play her head up, match play. And, I mean, she hung right in there and she brought up in the last hole. You know, and those good players know how to play. That's some of the things it's good because we learn how to be better by watching them some. You know, like the very first hole, I mean, she hits a horrible tee shot, the Michigan girl. Hits it over in the trees. They somehow find it out of the trees. Audrey hits it right down the middle, perfect. Hits it in there like 10 feet. This girl finds it, whacks it out of the trees, hits it in there 15 feet, makes it for par. Mm. Audrey misses, so it's like, how did I just tie that hole? I mean, the girl didn't even hit a good shot.
This is a beauty of match play.
Yeah. You know, and she did it again like three holes later, you know, but again, it's easy to start going, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going on? You know, it's like, but she hung right in there, man. She took her right to the last hole. So it was cool. You got to be uncomfortable, and then you start learning how to be more comfortable, and then you pull it off at the end, and it builds confidence and shakes you to another level of what you think you can do. I mean, she obviously should have a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. The girl's a really good player, you know, and she ended up beating her, so.
So I was on a group text message with a couple guys, and there was an article about Tiger you know, I think it was from Darren Clark, to somehow he's a good guy, but notoriously cheap. And it's got me thinking, I'm like, okay, Tiger's always still in the media, and you don't ever he's going to play golf again. It got me thinking, you know, we've got a golf segment here, but we're talking about Nebraska football still and their struggles or issues. But Tiger and Nebraska football is like the same thing right now.
A little bit.
So everyone's going back to
what they were like.
What they were like and how good they were. And how do you get them back to that? You know,
back to 2008.
Back
in 2009.
Back in 2000. The 2000 year was just like 95 for Nebraska fans.
Yeah.
You know, why can't Tiger do this? Why can't Nebraska football be this? It's got me thinking. It's just kind of funny how you just put the two. How their almost 95 team was the best ever in college football, and Tiger in 2000 was probably the best season ever that's ever been done in golf. It's got me thinking, like, man, it's just kind of funny how people just want to, you know, have that back, you know.
Well, and here's what it is, and Shuey, you can talk to this about kind of hitting that zone and enjoying the ride and not knowing when it's going to be over from reaching that professional level. And once you get that taste and that glimpse of excellence, I mean, you always want to try and get back there. But the fan bases, the golf fans, the Nebraska football fans, I mean, that's what the clamor's for.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know that it's still championship, now college football, playoff or bust. Nebraska fans are super intelligent, so they understand that it's not that level. But the waiting game to get back to relevancy and to be relevant is you're beating some teams that are some big boy teams.
Sure.
But it's not been the case of being close, really, even except for the Wisconsin game a year ago. Now you're falling to teams that are supposed to, you know, get paid to leave with a 40-point bruise. And right now, you look at Tiger, guys, and you can chime in on this, is he's not even able to go compete, right? Just because of his situation.
I mean, his body and everything like that, but just
kind of parallels are money.
No, it is. It's just because, you know, the golf, just something to correlate everything, because the golf season is winding down. You have the Tour Championship this week, because you got 30 players in the field. You have the President's Cup next week, which is it's good, but it just takes a backseat to the Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, you just think about what's going on in this state with football and how many people want to see the football program back. And you have Tiger, you know, coming back, and you're like, how many people want to see him get back to that? But I think both are...
They just want to see Tiger win a tournament, kind of like you just win the
right,
West.
Right, yeah, exactly. Nebraska fans just want to see us, right, be somewhat relevant, but it's easier said than done. That's just the thing.
And sometimes, you know, from a playing standpoint, is that you got players that are good players. Mm-hmm. They know how to play, and you know it. Like, I mean, I have a player on my team I know her. She's a really good player. She's a great player. And she's struggling mightily right now. And sometimes the harder they try to get better in what they know, the worse they get.
They're gripping, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they get, you know, they start overthinking. They start making mistakes that they normally don't make because they're over-processing what it is they feel like they have to do. So they play slower. They make more mistakes when they do it. So it's a fine line right there.
Shuey, hang on. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. Mike Shuhart, Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt. Winding down hour one.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
No time like now for some late summer / fall golf. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 434-5106. Membership benefits and pricing. Mike Shuhart, Chris Thompson. Mike Shuhart with us, Director of Instruction and Husker Golf. Shuey is in studio. Bill Bush, longtime assistant and in the Big Ten the last 10 years. He's a tremendous recruiter. He's co-defensive coordinator, and he's at Rutgers. He'll join us in 10 minutes. Brad Edwards coming up at 5:25. And more of your thoughts, can find us on Twitter at JMoore44 at Schmidt_radio. Shuey, to get back to the topic of dealing with it between the years and then also the physical aspect of it, whether it be golf or football or sport for the player, for the athlete, they'll eventually, if they stick with it, overcome, get over that hump, and it's the mental toughness that'll bring you through. You have the physical abilities, but it's got to start between the ears first.
No question, you know, and it's a combination of a whole bunch of things. Obviously, you got to have talent.
Mm-hmm. You got to be at a certain level.
Yeah, you got to have technique. So you got to have some talent. You got to have some technique, and then you got to have reps. So you got to put reps in, because the reps produce the product. The product is what builds the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
The confidence lets the talent that's there
come
out. So then it allows you to be a little more automatic or free when you play, you know. But, man, it's a vicious circle, because if you get an opposite product of what is needed, then you got to try to figure out, I need this product, but I'm not getting it. So it's like, what do you do? And I think sometimes a player gets very lost because they don't know what to do. So they don't know what to do, first of all, and they're too scared to do it.
Or they're doing – one of my favorite sayings, you said being comfortable with being uncomfortable, but don't mistake activity with achievement.
Exactly. I mean, it's just like practice. I can go out and practice for 8 hours a day. Am I getting any better?
No. You keep getting worse.
I'm probably getting worse.
Sometimes it's practicing smarter, not harder.
Exactly. You know, you got to practice. Practice is only perfect. Perfect practice is what makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So not just practice. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. So if I got bad practice habits and I'm practicing them all the time, I'm making them more permanent.
Mm.
So it's like you have to practice correctly. So I can get more done in 50 golf balls if I'm doing it correctly than I can in 250 golf balls,
mm-hmm.
2 hours, 2 days, you know. Again, a lot of times you make yourself worse than you make yourself better if you're not practicing the right thing, because you're just ingraining a bad habit of what you do. And then the problem with that is that the more that habit is very precise in how it has to function for mm-hmm. it to function, when you put it under the most extreme pressure, you're going to be exposed the most every time. I always say that's one of my big things. I said, if you have weaknesses, any weakness you have when you're under the most distress, you will be exposed. If I don't have any weaknesses, man, I can never be exposed.
There he is, Mike Shewhart.
It can work perfectly between football and golf.
Absolutely.
Any sport.
Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shewie, hang out if you want, brother.
I will.
It's Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt. We'll take caller 9 and 10 now to qualify for Nebraska Rutgers tickets. Those Blur Party passes giveaway tomorrow. Caller 9, caller 10 now. Nebraska Rutgers Blur Party passes. Qualify now. We'll do the drawing tomorrow. Caller 9 and 10, 466-3776.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's catch up with the native Nebraskan and former coach in Nebraska, now co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers and defensive backs coach, Bill Bush, with us. Coach, it's been a while since I've had a chance to say hi. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate the phone call. Always good to talk to people back there in Nebraska. It's a great place. That's obviously where I'm from.
It is, and now at Rutgers in year two, and let's start with this year's club and some of the growth you've seen on the defensive side of the ball from year one to year two. Are you pretty pleased with the progress?
Well, numerically, we're a lot better, obviously. You know, we're playing, if you look at the numbers, we're playing a lot better. And, you know, there was one score against Washington that was actually a special team score. So we played, you know, we felt we played decent against those guys, giving up 24 points. You know, they're obviously a very good football team and played well against Eastern Michigan, just not well enough to win the game. So that always falls on everybody. And then obviously last week we were a little bit of a mismatch for us and played well. The biggest thing that has been is just that our kids have really bought into what we're trying to get done, bought into Coach Ash as far as how do we handle our day-to-day business, and it's shown a lot of improvement. Tell me, we're just constantly working at it, that's for sure.
Tell me a little bit about that culture and getting that buy-in year one and now in year two with Coach Ash's vision and your vision defensively.
Well, you know, like you said, you always want to, you know, recruit to a system a little bit, but that can be a little bit of a misnomer too. I mean, obviously you just want to be able to have good football players, and it's coach's job for us to be able to adjust to them sometimes also. You don't want to just always be like, well, this is not what we want, but they can do this skill, but we don't do that. Well, we try to, what we've done, I felt, since we've got here, is to really be able to evaluate the players, what they do best, and put them in those spots. And so I think when the kids see that, they really buy into it because they know you're trying to do the best thing for them at all times. The thing that comes up the most year two that's so different from year one is just on how we can educate them better, on how they can prepare themselves better, how they watch film better, all the behind-the-scenes things. Because you know, the facts of the matter are, if you have decent talent, is that you'll lose more games than you win. And so we work really hard on the mental aspect of football and making sure that our guys really understand what's going on situational. So the guys have done a much better job in that area, in my opinion.
A few minutes here. Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio, co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers and defensive backs coaches. The Scarlet Knights come into Lincoln this Saturday. The last 10 years you've been an assistant in the Big Ten. What type of changes and performance growth have you seen in the conference? It's now regarded as likely the best conference in college football. 10 years ago, it was maybe one or two teams.
Well, I tell you, the thing that jumps out the most to us is that you know, it used to be such a, use the term, kind of a neck roll league type of thing, where it was, you know, two backs and you know, downhill football and you know 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of thing. And that doesn't exist near as much anymore. You see it out of every team, the ability to have a lot of really good skill players on offense and the ability to spread you out and the ability to have the quarterback be a dual threat guy. And so there are still some teams that may not base themselves out of that, but they all have the ability to do that. And that's where I think the conference has changed the most. And I think it's just the simple fact is that the recruiting within the conference amongst every team has gotten better, and they've done a great job. If they don't have speed locally, they find a way to go get speed.
You mentioned the dual threat aspect, where more and more colleges are using a spread, a tempo, a mobile quarterback, a handful of teams, and Nebraska's a pro-style team now under Coach Riley. But everybody is trying to get that dual threat guy that can run, extend plays, and, of course, throw the football. And have you seen progress defensively, not just with Rutgers, but globally, in an attempt to kind of sway the pendulum back? Because it's been a pretty high offensive-type game in college football the last several years. Is the defense going to eventually swing it back, or is it in a constant phase of adjustment for defenses against these type of quarterbacks?
Yeah, it'll be a constant phase of adjustment for you. Obviously, I mean, you just look at teams across the board. As like I said, I thought you see teams that play very good on defense. You know, the Alabamas and the teams that play very well, Clemson. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to play against both styles. And like I said, there's a lot of things to it. Is that if you want to play fast on offense and you want to go up tempo and you want to do all that, that's great. But you better move the ball and you better score, because if you don't, it wears your defense out just to a nub. Because they're off the field for about a minute, and they're right back on it. So those are the things. When you see the teams that are successful, it's like they're up tempo and they're moving the ball, getting first downs. You know, scoring obviously is the most important thing. But if they're moving the ball, it makes a big difference. The teams, there are a lot of teams that are spread teams. There's no magic. I mean, there's teams right now that they're not very good football teams, and that's what they run. So it still comes down to the guys in the uniform. Obviously, they can be able to get that done. But I do feel the defenses are starting to catch up, and the fact that they're just so used to, you know, they're we haven't huddled in I don't know how long on defense, 12, 15 years, you know, you just boom, you get lined up, you go play. Everyone knows that it's going to be a quicker pace game. They understand how to get calls faster. A lot of times early on when things were going quick and speed and different things were happening, it was just simply the mental adjustment to how fast things were going. And so I think that keeps coming along. By defenses, the teams that also, you know, really bother you a lot are teams that go slow, slow, then go fast. All of a sudden, they go tempo fast. And Washington did a very good job of that, to being just a normal pace team. And then at times, they'll jump into a speed tempo. And that's always a strain on the defense.
Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, you spent time as a GA at Nebraska from 90 to 93 under Coach Osborne, under Coach Darlington. What were you able to learn from those guys? And that was right, that 93 season, obviously a chance for a national championship. But I did quite a bit of research on just your time and where all you've been. And looking at that GA experience, what was it like for you?
You know, the best experience of my life. You know, it really was. You know, a couple of things. First of all, that's you grew up your whole life. I just kind of made it a mission that at some point in time I wanted to work at Nebraska and coach at Nebraska. So I just went there as a volunteer, and I just hung around the office. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't getting paid. I'd already had my master's degree, and I just kind of kept showing up. So they kind of thought that maybe I worked there, I guess. And so I'd make out a fake coaching uniform, and I'd drive to all the games, and I'd walk in with the team and find my way into the press box and do different things. And then Kevin Steele was the one, as the defensive coordinator at the time, was the one that just saw me in the office all the time and said, you know, why don't you come with me? So I just started going with him and learning football. And then, they had a GA spot open up mid-semester, and luckily enough, I was in the office when it happened, so I got the spot. And so that was a really fortunate situation. And then from that time on, then George Darlington just took me under his wing. I mean, George is my biggest mentor in college football. Nobody has treated me better or has ever been that good of a father figure to me. He's just a completely selfless person, and he let me teach and learn everything. He allowed me to get up and teach the black shirts. He allowed me to signal coverages in during the games because that's just the way he was. So without George Darlington, you know, I would never be in this profession. And then Coach Osborne, I said, to work for someone of that, you know, just that, just when you talk about a person, I mean, just as a person, how he led his life and how he led the team and his just core beliefs just made you want to go to work and work so hard for someone like that. And that's why they had such little turnover his entire career there, because he took such good care of his coaches, such good care of his players, and it was just such a great place to work. And I've always stayed close with Coach Osborne. We haven't spoken for, it's probably been about a year and a half now, but hopefully I get a chance to run into him when I'm back there, and hopefully I know I'll see George, that's for sure.
Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio. From a recruiting standpoint, that is something that you're pretty renowned for. And I look at Prince Amukamara that ended up at Nebraska. I look at Alex Smith that was at Utah for Urban Meyer. You've worked for Urban many times. You learned under Coach Steele and Coach Darlington. How have you absorbed their knowledge to kind of form your own way, so to speak, when it comes to recruiting? And how do you connect with kids? And is it different now than it was 15 years ago trying to get a kid to come to school?
Sure. The thing that stood out the most was that in the recruiting aspect of it was obviously to be a good evaluator and learn exactly what you're looking for in your evaluation. That comes down to a lot of things, you know, competitive spirit, ability, academics. There's a lot of things you go through. So one thing to try to limit your wasted time as far as recruiting someone that has no chance academically, recruiting someone that character-wise is not what you're looking for, you want to bring into the program. So you always want to be so sharp on your wasted time. After that, I think the most important thing is that you have to get them to like you. They have to be able to want your phone call to come in. They want to have to want to respond to your text, and you have to be able to have a relationship with them. And that's the part that you just work so hard at, and you know, trying to find the, you know, some people use the term champion or somebody that's in the inner circle of, because you don't know who that is, whether it's an aunt, an uncle, stepdad, you know, somebody that's also very involved in the process. But to get into the house and then just get a chance to really get to know them. I think you have to build that relationship with them. Then you can start to sell the program more once you have a relationship with the young man that worked with you know, with Prince, Eric Haig, you know, different players mm-hmm. that, you know, Cameron Meredith, different guys I recruited there at Nebraska, Ricky Tenar, some of those guys just getting a chance to get into their homes and getting a chance to know them got me started with them. And I learned that from all the great coaches. I learned that from the head coach, because the great head coaches I worked for, like Coach Osborne, always had time for a recruit. And it's the most important thing you do. I mean, don't kid yourself. There's nothing that's more important than recruiting. It's not just the exact ability that you bring in. It's how do they fit the program? How competitive are they? Do they do things right off the field? But in the end, every time a program doesn't go well and things go south, it's based off of one thing. It's based off of recruiting, and so that's the thing that you know, always made me that I like to win. So that's what I enjoyed about recruiting. Try to recruit good players. That's what I always felt. So it made it kind of fun. And it's fun. I enjoy it. It's one of the most fun things I do in my job.
Bill Bush with us, co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers. Coach, as we wrap up, thoughts on Tanner Lee, on Nebraska and their passing attack as you come into Lincoln Saturday?
Sure. Just so impressed. I mean, I know a lot of people back there as far as just your general fans. I have a ton of friends in Lincoln. I'm back in Lincoln, you know, every summer, just seeing people there that I know. And so, I mean, they raved about him. People talked about him. People had seen him practice, said he was, you know, just did an unbelievable job. You see it on film with Tanner at that. What I see the most is that the ball really jumps off his hand. I mean, he can really spin it. The ball, and he has all the throws. Some guys don't have all the throws. He has every throw. And that's very hard to defend. I know that there's probably been some criticism. There's been some interceptions of talk and sometimes in protection and things. And a lot of times, like I said, the difference between winning and losing and success is such a fine, fine line. And I just feel that some of the things that haven't went well for him at times has been such a fine line of why it didn't go well. And so I'm so impressed with what they do offensively. And then they match it up with the receivers. I think it's going to be an extreme challenge. It's been an extreme challenge to everybody who's played them. They throw the ball down the field, and it'll be the same thing throughout the whole season. I thought they're a very, very gifted offense.
Coach, how did you deal with criticism that last season at Nebraska? Because the toxicity level's pretty high right now after last weekend for Nebraska.
It was a kick right in the gut. You know, like I said, I wanted my whole life was to work in Nebraska. That's all I ever wanted. You know, I had opportunities when I was at Nebraska by other places to leave and have other jobs, and I would never even consider it. And things didn't end well, and so that was very, very hard for me personally to be able to have to deal with that. But like I said, you just keep going to work every day. You keep doing the things you have to do. It's so hard to say block it out, but it is true. And that's where, you know, you talk about recruiting being different from so long ago. Well, it's also much different, you know, in fan support now, because everybody has a voice now. And social media, there's a lot of ways conversations. They're everywhere. That's just not Nebraska. They're, you know, they're at all spots. That place is a little bit more of a hotbed because of just, like, you know, like I talked to the team about it. So this is, it's a special, special place. And what that football team means to that state, I said, I don't know if there's any place that compares to that. You know, I coached at Wisconsin. I told the guys, I said, when I was at Wisconsin for 2 years, we didn't lose many games at all. We played really well. But if you did lose and the Packers won the next day, everything was okay still. Mm-hmm. And so there's a difference in Nebraska on how those things work. And so I feel for any coach that has to go through a negative time, because it falls on their family, it falls on everyone around them. And I also know how hard every coach works and what they do. And I have friends on that staff at Nebraska, and I know what great coaches are and what a great job they do.
Bill Bush, co-defensive coordinator, defensive backs coach at Rutgers, native Nebraskan, back in Lincoln with Rutgers. Coach, we'll do this again. Take care, and thanks for a few minutes today.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Good to hear from him. Good to get his perspective on how it didn't work out at Nebraska the last time. And this guy has done it all for many, many greats when it comes to recruiting and being part of their staff. Speaking of great, when I think of greatness, I think of Sauter Heyman and the selection they have, but also how they hook you up. 0% interest financing through 2020. Check out their extensive collection on both Earth Mind and Pure Grown Diamonds. 1 carat diamonds available for only $99 down, $99 a month. Be a hero to her, her friends, and family. Voted best a year after year. Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln around West in Grand Island. See Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman today. SauterHeyman.com. Brad Edwards, Mr. ESPN, next.
And now.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, Jay Moore, Danny Burke, producing engineering, Shuey hanging out. Good stuff from former Nebraska assistant, now at Rutgers, Bill Bush. We welcome in with ESPN College Game Day, ESPN Radio, and ESPN Insider, Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how are you, sir?
Oh, doing well. What's going on? I guess it's probably not been a great week there.
It's been one of those weeks that you're, I don't want to say you're getting used to in Nebraska, but that are occurring more often, and that's the aftermath after a tough loss or an embarrassing loss, and I think the tough/embarrassing falls into this category with Northern Illinois. Not to knock their program, but it's not something that's supposed to happen when you shell out what you do for a home game to win as you get ready for conference play. You see a ton of college football. You also talk a lot of national college football. Nebraska is now back nationally on the map because of last Saturday. What's your reaction to last weekend?
Well, unlike the people who just saw the score, I recognize it for what it was, which is it was mostly flukish in that there were two pick sixes and, you know, Northern Illinois, well, it wasn't like they outplayed Nebraska. They just, you know, Nebraska made mistakes and Northern Illinois played, you know, mostly a clean game, and that was the difference. And, you know, Nebraska's just, they're not at a point where they have so much talent that they can overcome a sloppy performance like that, and that's basically all it was to me. And so, I mean, it looks bad, and I think probably the most damaging thing to Nebraska, I mean, outside of the, you know, the overall negativity around the program that results from it, I guess let me correct myself. That would be the most damaging thing to Nebraska is the overall negativity. But I would say, as far as this season goes, it's the fact that they took a second loss before conference play, which, you know, kind of reduces the margin for error in terms of, you know, getting to a bowl game and all that. But, it was obviously a poor performance, but it wasn't something that I came away from believing that Northern Illinois is better than Nebraska.
Brad, you got two programs right now nationally, one being Nebraska, one being Tennessee, that like to go back to reference back. They want it to back be where the 90s were. Tennessee wants it back to where Fulmer was there. Nebraska wants it back to when Osmer was there. Looking at these both programs, similarities, differences, struggles, who's closer to being back nationally? Can you draw any similarities there, or is there two, are they too far apart?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a gap between them right now in talent. I mean, Tennessee's recruited better over the last several years than Nebraska, and so maybe they're a little bit closer on the talent level to where they need to be to compete within their conference. But, you know, I think one similarity that I would point to is that they're both in the weaker division of their conference. And because of that, I think their expectations are maybe a little bit higher than you would think based on the overall profile, because both of them look at their division and they say, well, it's winnable at the moment, or, you know, certainly there are a lot of opportunities for victory there. And so I think that's one similarity that I would point to immediately with them. Now, I think the frustrations are maybe a little bit different in some ways. With Tennessee, it seems to be the same types of things over and over. I don't know that it always has been with Nebraska. But one other thing they do have in common is they've both lost a lot of close games in the last few years and in very painful ways, and just where a few plays go the other way and maybe you have a totally different feel for the coach and the direction of the program. But it is what it is. A loss is a loss, and even though you play a team even,
if you come out of the wrong end of the scoreboard, the impression is you're not as good as that team, and that's what sticks with you.
Brett Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, ESPN Radio with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, what? And I hate to go here. There's a lot of season left, so I'm going to preface it with that. That said, the hot seat talk has increased at Nebraska. And how is the Nebraska job viewed by even colleagues you have that used to coach that are out of coaching? Is it a desirable gig anymore?
I think that depends on the person, you know. And look, I think the resources are there, the fan support is there, and those are, you know, starting points for a lot of coaches. They want to have those things before they're even going to listen. So Nebraska has that going for it. I do think, though, that when you look at what happened with Pelini, mm-hmm. You know, I think he showed some frustration in that, you know, he felt like it was maybe a little bit unrealistic for fans to expect it to be like it was under Osborne, and that, you know, winning 9 games was not a bad season given the way that that things are now. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but certainly Mike Riley has done nothing to change that impression that's pretty much what you would, you know, what you would identify as a good season for Nebraska would be around 9 wins. So I think that's what would make me hesitant if I were a coach that were out there considering that job, is like, okay, have you seen enough since Osborne? I mean, forget the first few years of Solich and, you know, in the immediate aftermath, mm-hmm. but last 15 years, have you seen enough to lead you to believe that that's a program where you should have a good chance to win 10 games most years? And I'm not sure that the evidence is there that that's what it is. Now, that said, I think the right coach is going to win a lot of games anywhere. You know, I think there are a few guys out there. I'm not even going to go Saban on you. I mean, Mark D'Antonio is one. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if he had gone to Nebraska instead of Michigan State, I think he'd be doing the same thing there that he's done in East Lansing. And so, you know, like I said, it really depends on the person and you know how they see the, you know, whether they see it as an opportunity or whether they see it as a challenge that's maybe, you know, not worth the headache.
Clemson, monster win, impressive win. You guys were there against Louisville. And what do you have now in Clemson? Because you've got a quarterback that it looks like now can deliver on the road in big games. You knew the defense was going to be good. The quarterback was the question. Is it fair to say that's been answered for Clemson, and they should be a favorite to repeat when it comes to getting back to the playoff?
Look, I think that that was the big question we had about Clemson, was the offense and especially the quarterback first road start. You know, being in a conference game, national television, how's he going to respond? Mm-hmm. And the way that he played and the way that offense played, I think if you're looking for a flaw in Clemson, it's kind of hard to find at the moment. And that's not to say there isn't one there, but there's nothing obvious as a weakness that you can kind of latch on to if you're an upcoming Clemson opponent. That said, I'm not really sure that Louisville is that good outside of Lamar Jackson. And I don't even know that they called the best game possible to give themselves a chance to win the other night. I think Petrino appears to be very set on showing everyone how much Lamar Jackson's improved as a passer. And I think he called the first half that way. We just wanting him to drop back more and run less. And he was not on target a lot of the time throwing the ball in the first half, and they fell behind. And then, you know, it's kind of too late at that point to run your way back into the game. I think they would have posed a bigger threat to Clemson if they had allowed him to do what he does best and, you know, get out on the edge running the ball and all that. But that's not where they went for most of the game. They didn't do nearly as much of it as they did the year before, which was really successful. And so I guess bottom line, it's obviously an A grade for Clemson in terms of what they did in that environment. But at the end of the year, I'm not sure that this will be one that we'll look back on and say, wow, I mean, to have beaten that team by that much is a really big deal. But certainly Clemson does look like the favorite in the ACC. And, you know, I think a lot of people right now are saying, like, the chance of getting Alabama Clemson for a third straight year is looking better than average.
Brad, getting back to the Big Ten real quick, one team that I think has caught a lot of people's attention is a team in that Jeff Brohm has taken over with in Purdue, and they're all of a sudden rise to playing some damn good football. Are you buying stock in this yet, or are you going to wait to see how they perform against Michigan?
Look, I've seen enough from them to know that they're no longer a doormat. I'm not saying they're a good team, but I think, you know, they're at least an average team at this point. And when you look at the way that Michigan has played offensively so far this year, and especially the struggles they've had in the red zone, coming away with touchdowns, I think Purdue is now good enough offensively. And they played well defensively last week as well. I mean, Missouri's not a great team, but they're supposed to be a good offense. And go in there and hold them without a touchdown, that's a great job on both sides of the ball by Purdue. So I think they are good enough that if Michigan does not get better offensively, and like I said, they go out and just kick a bunch of field goals, Purdue can beat them. And so for that reason, this is a very intriguing game to me.
Brad, about 90 seconds. Bigger surprise last week, Texas's performance or Mississippi State's performance?
Mississippi State's. I talked all week about how I expected that Texas-USC game to go four quarters. I just felt like with the emotional level that USC reached the previous week against Stanford, it was going to be really difficult for them to be as ready for Texas the following Saturday. And on top of that, Tom Herman, his career has been great as an underdog. And so that game, I don't know if it played out exactly the way I was expecting, but the fact that it was close was not surprising to me. Mississippi State, I wasn't shocked that they won. I was shocked that they dominated physically. That was unexpected to me. And I can't wait to see what they do this week. And look, it's the same type of thing, which is that Mississippi State was clearly as ready as you can be for a game against LSU. Can they get back to play at that same level at Georgia this week? Now, the good thing for them is they're now going on the road. Now they're still an underdog. And so they have that going for them psychologically in terms of, you know, getting their best effort. This will be a fun one. Mississippi State's an interesting team because they have some players defensively. I think their quarterback has a lot of potential, you know, to be one of the best dual threats in the country. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do in Athens, because if they win this game, certainly from what we've seen so far, I think you'd come out of September believing they are the second best team to Alabama in the SEC.
Absolutely. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, ESPN Radio, and ESPN.com. Brad, we'll shout out to you next week. Thanks for making time today, bud.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
You too. I think Brad is... he had a little dance class going on.
Gymnastics, usually.
Yes,
and the Wednesday
yes.
Night gymnastics or soccer, I always remembered.
Wednesday gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Jordy Nelson fans, keep your ears on. We'll talk fantasy with our friends on the Jock Talk next. Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Talk Wednesday. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Chris. How you guys doing?
We're good. We are in the midst. I'm still winless in fantasy football, but that shouldn't shock you.
Welcome to the club. I'm there with you.
Well,
it's a rough start.
It is a rough start, and Green Bay's not had a ton of good news. A little bit better news this week, though, with Jordy Nelson. Let's focus on Jordy, a K-State product. You know what he did a year ago, catching touchdowns, and 2 years removed from an ACL. Sounds like he tweaked that quad pretty badly. Let's focus on a quad strain today with our Jock Doc, Dr. Brandon, and kind of give us the breakdown here with Jordy and what's up with him.
Yeah, sure. So just anatomically speaking, thinking about the quad, everybody knows your hamstring is kind of the back muscles along your thigh. So the quad, you just switch around to the front side. Your quad muscles on the front side of your thigh. And essentially on the front side, there's kind of three main ones. The biggest one we always worry about is kind of your main one right down the center. Your quadriceps femoris is the main one. And then also there's an important quad muscle that's around your knee called the vastus medialis, and that's one that's important after like an ACL recovery. They're not saying specifically exactly which one that you already strained. Usually when this injury occurs, it's kind of in the main kind of quadriceps, right down the middle of the quad fem, and that's typically the most common one that's injured with this type of event. And again, in an athlete, you know, typically this is more of a strain type, kind of similar to the hamstring where you kind of stretch the muscle a little bit. You maybe stretch a little bit kind of where the muscle becomes tendon. If you remember, the tendon part is the part that actually hooks the muscle to the bone. But that's really what we're dealing with Jordy, at least based on what they're describing. Obviously, there were some concerns when this injury first occurred that he actually had pulled part of the tendon off the bone, and that's obviously a much bigger deal. It means, you know, more of a surgical type of picture versus if something where there's more of an injury kind of within the muscle itself is something that tends to heal very well on its own in time.
How does Jordy stretch that part of his quad? How does he stretch the muscle? And is there anything that can be done precautionary-wise next time or moving forward with this part of his body?
Yep. So, you know, typically how this occurs, it's more of a where you basically you're planting, you're coming down on that leg, the foot is solid, and basically you're either in a kind of a deceleration where you're planting and the thighs maybe travel a little bit forward, you're trying to stop your knee from moving forward, the quad fires. And then what happens is if you get a little bit more travel beyond that, as the muscle fires, especially in somebody as strong as him, it fires, it kind of overpowers maybe the connection where the muscle hooks up to the tendon, and basically it stretches part of that. And that's what occurs, and so you stretch those muscle fibers, you're in essence tear part of the muscle fibers. And that's how the injury occurs most of the time, as opposed to kind of like a blunt trauma type of injury. And so once that occurs, let's talk about, you know, how do you rehab something like this? And that truly is the answer. It's a rehab deal. It's into therapy. It's stretching. It's icing very, you know, quickly. And those are the kind of things to kind of get it loosened up. In terms of, you know, prevention on these things, the big thing really is making sure you have a great, you know, flexibility program is important, but also a really good warm-up program. This is where we see a lot of our young athletes get into trouble where they're not warming up properly. You go out there and you start playing, and that's how, you know, on a cold day, for example, you tend to go out not warmed up and tweak, you know, your hamstring, if you will. You can do the same to your quad muscle. It's just not as common to, you know, tweak the quad like you do the hamstring. But that's important because as you look at recovery from these things, it does sometimes take a little bit longer to recover from a quad muscle. It's kind of a little bit of a different injury than, say, the hamstring in the back, but similar to the hamstring in the sense of it's very easy to kind of retweak this. So as these athletes kind of get back playing, it's pretty easy to cut wrong or take off and cut and kind of retweak this thing, and it kind of becomes a bit of a nagging injury those first 4 to 6 weeks back. And sometimes it does kind of linger throughout the season until you really can rest it in the end. And so those would be some things we'd worry about for Jordy.
Jordy Nelson, our topic, a quad strain is what he has suffered at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert is with us. So is this just something that is going to be an issue all season long, potentially, unless he takes a month off? I mean, is that just the facts of life here with Jordy?
Yeah, you know, I definitely would worry about that. I mean, I think that, unfortunately, is kind of the outlook you have on these, unless you're one of those really fortunate athletes that can heal this up quickly, and maybe you can bounce back in 3 or 4 weeks and not have an issue with it, you know, for the rest of the season. Yeah, clearly some of this is, you know, what is kind of the grade of this injury? You know, we tend to try to grade these injuries, you know, from a lower level to a higher level, obviously. So it depends kind of where he's at on that spectrum. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, you do kind of worry about these lingering throughout the season. And I think that's, unfortunately, the mentality I would take. And if you get lucky, he rehabs well, and doesn't become a problem for the rest of the season, that'd be great. You'd take that.
When you look at activities he's asked to do on the field in this quad area, the deceleration coming out of a break, accelerating to catch a deep ball, you know, the timing and precision with Green Bay's offense. And then, you know, what type of player Jordy is when it comes to block if Green Bay's run game gets going ever. I mean, there's some activities he's got to be able to do. Of these things that he needs to do to be an every down player, what is more likely to cause or recur this injury? Is it the pass game, or is it the blocking side of things?
You know, probably a little bit more on the blocking side. You know, it's a lot of that kind of that deceleration stuff that can get you. But the other thing you have to think about, too, is, you know, what are you trying to do when you catch a ball? You try to, you know, be elusive and get away from other defenders. And so as you do that, you have to plant hard, decelerate, and then cut another direction. And so that's really that's probably where he's going to experience it more, trying to make those more down-the-field moves. If you're doing kind of an out-back route, you go out, plant, and turn right around, kind of a stop route, that's going to be a problem for him. You know, sometimes that's a pretty effective use of him. And then you figure, you know, even though it's not the hamstring, he's probably going to lose a little bit of speed with this, which, you know, he's a decent kind of technique and separation guy. That's going to be a problem, especially the first couple weeks.
Let me ask you this. How much strain was put on the quad because of this being the same leg as his ACL? Any collateral overcompensation even this far removed from the surgery?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've tried to study that some, and I can't say there's a bunch of great studies out there that look at that. It definitely makes you wonder. Again, I'm not certain what graft he had. I think he may have had a patella graft. I'm not certain if it was a hamstring graft. But that's a good question for what, you know, graft choice they use for the ACL, because that could potentially impact us, especially if it was, you know, potentially on the patella. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty certain they didn't use a quad graft. At any rate, you definitely wonder that, because, you know, one of the most challenging things to get back as an athlete after a big ACL injury is that muscular balance or equilibrium. And so, you know, you borrow tendons from some part of your body, patella, hamstring, somewhere. I mean, you've really, you know, messed up that equilibrium, which at that level is so critical, you know, to being able to separate yourself from other athletes. So, yeah, I think it would be reasonable to say that, sure, you know, he probably changed things some. I'm not saying the surgeon necessarily did, but just in general, having the ACL injury and going through that process, sure, he's probably different in that extremity for sure.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. The quad strain from Jordy Nelson is he tries to get back being Jordy Nelson. We'll see how this goes. Dr. Brandon, best of luck to you. Week 3 in fantasy. We'll both hopefully get that W.
Absolutely. All right, Chris. Well, hey, you guys take care. I sure appreciate the time.
Jock Doc Wednesday. You might have noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year. That's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct from their farm the AgriGold way. High expectations for every seed that goes into the ground, and our approach to soybeans no different. High-performance soybeans from the brand you already know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Your chance at Rutgers, Nebraska tickets coming up.
All-State, two-year starter, and rush in for the Big Red, an NFL vet.
Is Dudeness or Duder or, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
It's Blackshirt Jay Moore with Hail Varsity Radio.
There he is. Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore. Good times today, talking some football. Good stuff from former Nebraska assistant and now Rutgers co-D coordinator Bill Bush. Brad Edwards got to spend some time with Blackshirt Jay Moore here. Danny Burke producing. Okay, we will do a drawing this time tomorrow for Nebraska Rutgers tickets and Blur party passes. That is going to happen. We'll give you a chance to qualify here shortly. Bird, some final thoughts as we head off into the sunset this Wednesday. A couple of thoughts here on Nebraska. We'll get into this topic tomorrow. We just got slammed for time, but specifically pro cons of Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to see is what's the attitude of this football team going forward for the rest of these nine conference games. Are they going to get this thing resurrected, or is this what kind of people are expecting? Mm-hmm. You know, it to be a slippery slope and going downhill. That's what I'm excited to see. You know, what kind of grit, what kind of fight they have. I know Rutgers isn't the best team, but I know they're well improved. I mean, they played well against Washington, you know, first game of the year, and I know Ash's defenses. They're give you some multiple looks, and they play tough. So I'm excited just to see what this team's about. You know, hey, it's either piss or get off the pot now. Mm-hmm. You know, make up your mind what you're going to do.
Are jobs open beyond just due to injury as well.
Right.
What I'm interested in seeing on the offense. And not specifically a quarterback. I think you stick with Tanner. That's something that I'm not concerned about someone behind Tanner doing better.
No.
Now, if Tanner gets
O-line's going to struggle. No one's going to be successful
now,
out there.
If he gets time and he's not performing, then you have that discussion. But who's going to step up and play well on the offensive line? And do you commit? Are you committing to that 40-plus pass per game plan, or are you... You try and run it and stick with it and eke it out for a long-term type body shot approach to Rutgers, or for that matter, anyone else in the Big Ten. Caller 9 and 10, qualify right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Caller 9, caller 10, you qualify for Nebraska Rutgers tickets and those Blur party passes. 2:30 kickoff. The Blur spot's a great spot to kind of go kick it at. Then you get ready for Nebraska and Rutgers. We'll do that giveaway in one day. 24 hours from now, we'll have a winner for Blur party passes and Nebraska Rutgers tickets. And caller 9 and 10 qualify right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Caller 9 and 10, Danny will get you qualified. Bird, what's shaking the rest of the day?
Not a whole lot. Head home, a little dinner.
A little hot pocket?
Yeah. No, it was more than a little hot pocket.
Okay, well, let's check and see if it was just you alone.
No,
if I was Mama Bear.
No, Mama's at home. So just hang with fam. Not much on Wednesday nights, but maybe no. Is Maxion back with on Wednesday nights
maybe.
On ESPN?
Maybe Northern Illinois.
Right,
play.
Maybe. Short week.
Caller 9 and 10 now for Nebraska Rutgers qualification. Bird, good to see you, brother.
You got it, guys.
Danny, thank you. Back tomorrow at 4:00.